You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Matt Walsh, Chris Roseborough, Greg Kokel, Hans Feeney, and Katie Faust at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes both live and on-demand viewing. For more information and to register, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385.
I wish we taught more in our schools about the Islamic faith. I wish we talked about all the great confessional faiths. And what people don't realize is one of my avocation is theology.
It's interesting that the sort of like traditional American leftism is clashing with, you know, millennial progressivism.
The Reformation was not a revolution. And thinking we have to take on and imitate the worship styles and practices of non-sacramental Christians is very dangerous.
I think the first thing is just knowing the arguments about the truth of the matter. That's why shows like yours, Issues Etc., are so important, because you're equipping people to make the argument.
Iowa State University computer science graduates love Issues Etc.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Well, it was bound to happen. In the cancel culture atmosphere, the exposure of systemic racism and racism elsewhere, sooner or later, Margaret Sanger's name was going to come up, and her connection, an extrapolatable connection to Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry, was going to come up. And the media, they were going to have to cover it. And they finally got around to doing that. How did the New York Times do in covering Margaret Sanger's name being taken off of a Planned Parenthood clinic? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of the removal of Margaret Sanger's name from a Planned Parenthood clinic with Terry Mattingly, founder and editor of Get Religion. After that, we'll spend some time with Dr. Christopher Mitchell remembering Mary Magdalene. The church remembers her on this day. He is editor of the Concordia Commentary Series. Katie Faust of Them Before Us will be with us to talk about the possibility of legalizing polygamy. It's already underway in Massachusetts, and then it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email, talkback at issuesetc.org, and the comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to discuss media coverage of the removal of Margaret Sanger's name from a Planned Parenthood clinic, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Did the New York Times avoid the bad news in this story about the removal of Margaret Sanger's name from a Planned Parenthood clinic?
The short answer to that, frankly, is no, they didn't. In fact, as I started reading this story, I read it with a strong, to say the least, degree of skepticism about what they would put in here. And there was some interesting language, in large part because the Planned Parenthood press release contained some strong language. To some degree, there's a saying in Washington that when you have a problem, you should hang a lantern on it. And what that phrase means is when your group is going to face bad publicity about something, you need to make sure that the first thing you say about it is honest enough that you'd kind of define the terms of the debate and the argument. So as a result of that, you had some fairly strong language in this piece. Planned Parenthood of Greater New York will remove the name of Margaret Sanger, a founder of the national organization, from its Manhattan Health Clinic because of her, quote, harmful connections to the eugenics movement, the group said on Tuesday. Well, eugenics makes it into the lead. A little while longer, a few sentences later, I should say, you have this. The removal of Margaret Sanger's name from our building is both a necessary and overdue step to reckon with our legacy and acknowledge Planned Parenthood's contributions to historical reproductive harm, H-A-R-M, within communities of color. Now, as I read the rest of the piece, I kept saying, whoa, I'm looking forward as a reader to knowing what historical reproductive harm means and who's going to get to interpret that phrase. But still, that's, would you agree that's some fairly strong language?
Well, yes. I mean, it's not quite an admission, but it is strong.
Our contributions to it certainly concedes that they have made contributions to historical reproductive harm, and they've just conceded what for decades everyone has been trying to get them to concede, which was that Margaret Sanger was directly linked to eugenics. Now, so what does eugenics mean? Well, they put it in the context, just as you did, that you have all kinds of people in history right now whose legacies are being reconsidered. You know, they talked about Princeton University and President Woodrow Wilson and his segregationist views leading to this coming off a building. And it talked openly about the fact that Planned Parenthood has defended her work as recent, and this is, I thought, was a strong point. As recently as 2016, the group issued a fact sheet, the group being Planned Parenthood, saying that while it condemns some of her beliefs, she had mostly been well-intentioned in trying to make birth control accessible for poor and immigrant communities. That fact sheet is an amazing document, and I would assume that the people at Planned Parenthood knew that they had to get out in front on that document. They conceded that she met with the KKK to spread message about birth control. That condemned her support for policies to sterilize people who had disabilities, for banning immigrants with disabilities, et cetera. There's some strong stuff that they had to own up to because it was already in print. Now, pretty early in this story, they brought in someone to make sure that the readers understood that they were not putting Sanger down completely. Sanger was still a very important historical person. They considered her more good than bad. And so thus we read, Ms. Sanger has had defenders who say the decision to repudiate her lacks historical nuance. Ellen Chesler, a senior fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, a think tank, and the author of a biography of Ms. Sanger, pretty logical person to interview, and the birth control movement, said that while the country was undergoing past social change and reconsidering prominent figures from the past, Ms. Sanger's views have been misrepresented. The eugenics movement had wide support at the time in both conservative and liberal circles, and blah, blah, blah. Ms. Sanger was definitely a liberal. That meant she was just trying to do good things for white middle-class people. And in general, the key is that she thought everybody should have fewer children. The world would be a better place, everybody would be happier, children would be happier if everyone had fewer children. And oh yeah, by the way, it was especially important to have fewer children in certain races, social groups, people with disabilities, etc. So the eugenics card is on the table. So the minute I read that she still has her defenders, I thought, okay, this is a big day for conservative critics of Sanger. Who's going to get to speak to the issue of Sanger, race, disabilities, poverty, and birth control slash abortion? So I kept reading, and I kept reading, and I kept reading. And take a wild guess who got to speak to actually attack Sanger, to say, we've known this all along, we've been avoiding this issue, blah, 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 blah. Who do you think they went to?
Who was it?
No one. So to some degree, they let Planned Parenthood get out ahead of this, but they didn't actually talk to anyone who knew this material inside out and could react to it. So I guess if you were going to say they quoted someone, they simply pointed out, this paragraph, the decision to drop Ms. Sanger's name from the clinic creates an unusual alignment between the New York group and anti-abortion conservatives like Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, and Ben Carson, the federal housing secretary, who pointed to Ms. Sanger's beliefs in eugenics to criticize Planned Parenthood and its mission. And then they went back to the defense. In other words, this is all politics. And it's all politics about the funding of Planned Parenthood. We're not going to quote anybody who could actually critique this the way it was once critiqued before he changed his views by someone like Jesse Jackson, who used to be strongly pro-life before he became a national figure in the Democratic Party. And more than anyone else, it was an essay by Jesse Jackson who changed my own views on abortion all the way back in the late 70s and the early 80s. And you keep waiting for someone to get to step to the plate and take on the views of Margaret Sanger. Someone, I mean, you've had, is Planned Parenthood going to be the most honest critic of Margaret Sanger? Let me repeat that again and think about it. In this New York Times piece is a public statement from Planned Parenthood going to be the most articulate criticism allowed of Margaret Sanger? And the answer is yes. That just amazed me. I immediately, just within like 3 minutes, created a list of some people that they could have considered going to. You could have gone, now this falls into the category of a usual suspect. You could go to Alveda King, someone who has spoken to this issue many, many times. If you were looking for someone with a connection to the news, I'll bet you that Louisiana State Senator Katrina Jackson, the person behind the abortion legislation that was recently struck down in the U.S. Supreme Court, African-American, female, Louisiana, progressive on so many issues, but very strongly pro-life. I'll bet State Senator Katrina Jackson would have been an interesting voice here. I went over to the homepage for Democrats for Life, and sure enough, right now, their front page is dominated by Black Lives Matter, a whole life perspective. And here are the faces of six people willing to speak specifically to the issue of abortion, race, in the context of racial justice, and whether or not the African-American community has been singled out for policies that favor abortion. That strikes me as a potentially interesting and diverse group. And notice that to this point, I don't think I've gone to a right-wing Republican yet. You could go to a famous book if you look up books on this subject. How does this title sound to you? War Against the Weak, Eugenics and America's Campaign to Create a Master Race. Does that sound like a book that might have something to say about this topic? The author is Edwin Black, who's been nominated 16 times for Pulitzer Prizes and is a former award-winning reporter for the New York Times. It sounds to me like Edwin Black might have been someone that it would be interesting to call up. Although, you know, he's probably, once again, not a conservative, but he's been interviewed hundreds of times on topics related to eugenics and to other topics, on some pretty touchy subjects like IBM's involvement in the Holocaust, which was the book I knew him from. And one final name, since the New York Times didn't want to interview him in a story that I talked about today that directly mentioned his work, why not call up Dr. Robert George at Princeton University and talk to him? I would imagine that he would be very familiar with the history of this topic. But the point is, you might want to have someone more critical of Margaret Sanger quoted in your article as an expert other than the head of Planned Parenthood in New York?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking with him about media coverage of the removal of Margaret Sanger's name from a Planned Parenthood clinic. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, so how is this New York Times piece any different than a very detailed press release from Planned Parenthood?
Many Christians today are simply stuck on the bench instead of engaging productively with others on the important kingdom issues we face.
Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason talking about his presentation on discussing Christian convictions at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Here's the reason. They just don't know how to maneuver comfortably in a conversation in a way that does not put them at risk, that actually makes a difference, and that looks more like diplomacy than D-Day. Well, that's what I'm going to do at the conference. I want to give a simple but powerful way to get off the bench and get into play safely and effectively.
You can watch Greg Kokel's presentation at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Conference registrants can watch live and on demand. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your church's chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam, their glitter is shedding, and they're held together with toothpicks. Now is the perfect time to replace them with AdCruisman's Christmas in July sale. Participating artists have discounted their products, so stock up on jewelry, crucifixes, art, church banners, music, greeting cards, and more. Discounts range from 10 to 50% off. Visit us at adcrucem.com to take advantage of the sale. That's adcrucem.com.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. We're talking about media coverage of the removal of Margaret Sanger's name from a Planned Parenthood clinic. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, what distinguishes this New York Times piece from just a very detailed press release from Planned Parenthood if Planned Parenthood gets to do all the talking?
Well, I mean, the irony is the article is not a press release because it includes criticism from the left. In other words, it actually includes what I think is a valid point of view, which is that there are people who would think that still that Planned Parenthood shouldn't have conceded this point. And that point of view gets into the article, and that's valid there. I mean, that's a You might not think that there are viewpoints to the historical and cultural left of Planned Parenthood, but obviously in this case there are. So that prevents it from being a public relations release because to some degree, here's someone saying, well, I think what Planned Parenthood did is wrong. They shouldn't have taken her name off, or they should have been more descriptive of defending her. But doesn't that just point out how important it would be to then have people on the other side that would argue, well, Planned Parenthood didn't go far enough. They didn't look specifically here in the midst of the Black Lives Matter explosion and debate. They didn't go far enough to actually examine her views on race and her views on kind of what do inferior races look like and sound like and Who is that? And, oh, by the way, how did the eugenics movement inspire Hitler? And there were some, by the way, some conservative, allegedly conservative heroes in American life whose views were applauded by Hitler. And there's things like that that you could say. But my point is, if you have the press release and you're going to shoot at it from the cultural and moral left, wouldn't it have been important to also have some critics coming at it from the other side? Especially since, and I know this is very hard for the New York Times to realize, there are politically liberal pro-lifers. There always have been, there always will be, and they're out there. I mean, you could have gone to a number of very liberal, on a lot of moral and social issues, a lot of liberal Catholic leaders and received some gripping quotes about this issue as well. So it's not a press release because it wasn't friendly enough to the left. So they put them in it to make sure that that side of the story got balanced. What can't make it into the story is people who don't think this criticism of Sanger went far enough. That's the viewpoint that's missing. And thus, to some degree, that's the people that are still locked out of the debate, or their whole point of view is said, oh, yeah, Ted Cruz and conservative Republicans don't, you know, are not going to say this was enough.
Since we're talking about the New York Times, is there any tie-in to the recent resignation of Barry Weiss?
Well, I think this is a very interesting case of what we talked about her words about there being a new orthodoxy at the Times. Because to some degree, what we have here is an editing of a New York Times orthodoxy. If the defense of Planned Parenthood meant defending Sanger, then the basic orthodoxy that has been in place at the New York Times for quite some time has been a kind of orthodoxy in which you were not allowed to talk about two sides of Sanger, abortion, and eugenics. So now we're going to have to tweak the orthodoxy. Why are we going to have to tweak the orthodoxy? Well, in part because Planned Parenthood has decided to do so. But what can't we do? We can't actually allow qualified or even liberal, politically speaking, voices to critique the orthodoxy if they challenge the orthodoxy itself. So Barry Weiss was talking about the fact that the old liberal orthodoxy at the Times is now being critiqued by a group of people who absolutely positively know the truth on a whole host of different issues, and they're only going to let the New York Times speak the truth because that's what the Times should do, is tell the truth to the public from the viewpoint of the people who make up the New York Times and the newsroom / College of Cardinals. So this is a very interesting case, and if you interviewed Barry Weiss about this, I don't know what her own personal views are about abortion or Sanger, but I'll bet you she would point this out, that this was an interesting case of watching the Times have to kind of edit its own orthodoxy on abortion, Sanger, eugenics, nasty stuff about that topic. But the most important thing we can see here is who doesn't get to take part in that debate about what the new orthodoxy will state. Does that make sense?
Since we're talking about the name of Margaret Sanger, she's not on every Planned Parenthood clinic, but she is on an award that Planned Parenthood has given out since 1966. Recipients include President Johnson, Martin Luther King Jr., Bella Abzug, Jane Fonda, Ted Turner, Hillary Clinton, and most recently of note, Nancy Pelosi. Those awards might hang in their offices. Is that a good follow-up?
that would certainly be worth calling some of those people up and asking what they think. I can predict their answer. I accepted this ward because I think that birth control and a woman's choice trumps all other concerns that we might have about her, and that I received this ward in sign of the good parts of her work. I mean, I'm not a press agent, but I would expect that that's what they would say. So yes, that's a perfectly valid angle. At the same time, I think they should, since the most explosive segment of this in the current news context is how does eugenics and the work of Sanger fit into the discussions about Black Lives Matter, especially since we've already had people condemning the people who are marching with the banners that say unborn Black Lives Matter. That's already become a subject of contention. I would call up African-American activists on both sides of that debate and say, how does this action to reevaluate Sanger affect your views on the issue? As Jesse Jackson said long ago, what we see, back before he changed his mind on abortion, let me stress that, he said, what we see in government policies is who the government and the powers of our country are willing to pay money to make their lives go away instead of providing money to help encourage their lives, fulfill their lives, and help them get ahead. So yes, I would go right straight to African-American pro-lifers, especially if you could find any in academia with credentials on studies of Sanger. I predict there would be some. I would go straight to them, and I would go straight to their critics in this debate and write a piece on how the Sanger decision affects the debate about hashtag unborn Black Lives Matter.
I'm curious about that phrase, long overdue. Does the New York Times piece ever attempt an answer or ask for an answer to the question, why now?
Well, they put it in the context of the historical moment where all kinds of people that we have considered heroes, their lives are now being reevaluated, and here's another American hero whose life is now being reevaluated. That's the grammatical construction for the idea. This is going on right now. Gosh, it's now even affected Sanger.
So, does the piece mention abortion, which is the only reason Planned Parenthood is really a controversial institution in the United States?
That's a great question. Let me reach over here on my keyboard and type in just a bit, and we get three references to abortion in this article. Two of them are at the very end, and it talks about Sanger had treated a woman named Sadie Sachs who had given herself an abortion. Sadie asked a doctor how she could have avoided having another baby. The doctor recommended abstinence. Then you have a repeat abortion in this woman's story. Then the only other mention is Ted Cruz and the anti-abortion people. So I think it's safe to say that especially abortion in relation to African-American communities, the controversial issue of where Planned Parenthood builds many of its clinics, all of the topics that Black pro-lifers would want to discuss are avoided, other than the word eugenics. The orthodoxy was edited here to be able to say, yes, this woman was involved in the eugenics movement. I like it says harmful connections to the eugenics movement instead of one of the major leaders of the eugenics movement, which I think is how her critics would describe her.
Finally then, Terry, with a minute or so, we're obviously analyzing this in real time, but what would be your assessment of what's going on? This is news. This is an opinion. What's going on in the New York Times newsroom as we speak?
About this topic?
About this topic, and obviously things are in flux and people are wondering, what does this story tell us about the state of the New York Times news desk?
If there isn't some kind of follow-up coverage, either from the left or the right, academia, activism, whatever, if this basically vanishes other than, what's the cliche, Republicans pounced. If the next story is pro-life people pounced on this story, I think that will tell you all you want to know, that they didn't reevaluate this subject enough to see it as anything more than just another political battle about abortion, with the usual suspects on both sides. And boy, we sure don't want to have to quote anybody on the other side of this one. Whereas what I'm asking them to do is actually talk to conservatives and liberals, political liberals who are pro-life, and especially African-American pro-lifers, and pull this right back into the subject that they themselves made it news in the first place, which is Black Lives Matter and the current mood in America.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
We will be remembering Mary Magdalene, as the church does on this day. Dr. Christopher Mitchell, editor of the Concordia Commentary Series, will be our guest on the other side of the break.
Our life together as the church after COVID-19 will bring new challenges. For example, we might be tempted to skip the regular gathering of God's people because we're more comfortable streaming it on Facebook instead. May it not be. Join the Reverend Dr. Mark Wood as he explores this theme in his article for the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness titled, Gathering Again, It Will Not Be the Same. Subscribe at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll close out Romans with final instructions and concluding doxology. Then we'll launch into St. Matthew with the book of the genealogy, from Abraham to Jesse, from David to the exile. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior, who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Concordia Lutheran, Wilmington, Delaware. Grace Lutheran, Clarksville, Tennessee. Emmanuel Lutheran, Appleton, Minnesota. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. And Trinity Lutheran, Savannah, Georgia. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.